On this episode of Video Culture, we'll talk Kurt Russell with Breakdown and Executive Decision.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And thank you for joining this episode of Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm your other host, Matthew Essery.
I like how I quickly go into announcer to just like regular guy. Because I have to play both roles, you know what
you
I mean?
You do.
All right. So on this episode, like I said, we're talking about Kurt Russell.
Yeah. I'm going to go and tell you something, Ryan, and I'm going to tell the audience this. Kurt Russell is my favorite movie star, so I'm psyched about this episode.
So you're a little biased.
Yes, I am. I adore Kurt Russell and have for most of my life.
Well, that's fine. We were both a little biased when we did the Winona Ryder episode.
It's true.
Maybe a little bit of the Fletch episode when we did Chevy Chase. Yeah. I mean,
young Chevy Chase for sure. We're both fans of.
Yeah, both fans. Yeah. So, but what draws you into Kurt Russell so much?
To me, he just has this just likable everyman quality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the kind of guy you'd want to hang out with. Like, a lot of actors, you can think, I wouldn't want to actually spend time around that person.
Mm-hmm.
But Kurt Russell seems like he'd be a fun person to spend time with, right. And he's just got this innate decency about him,
right?
And he's a really good actor. Can you think of any bad Kurt Russell performance? I certainly can't.
No, because even the movies that have been, you know, like The Best of Times, for example, you know, it was one or
it's not the greatest film, but he's good in it.
Yeah, he's really great. He's really captivating in it. And he's playing along the side of, you know, like Robin Williams. You know what I mean?
And when he's at his best, he's transcended. I mean, Big Trouble in Little China, Jack Burton. He's
my favorite.
Plissken.
Yeah.
He's Captain Ron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Captain Ron's amazing.
Well, right. I mean, and that's the thing. He could even take a movie like that.
Which should be terrible.
Cabin Boy.
Yeah, Captain Ron.
Or Captain Ron, not Captain Ron.
Well, we're not doing Chris Elliott. Maybe next time.
They're so similar. But yes, you can take a movie like that, but his performance is still...
Makes it.
Yeah, it's still wonderful.
Anyway, he elevates whatever he's in.
All right. Like, so, and a lot of people say that, like, you know, Tom Hanks is like a good everyman character.
Yes.
But Tom Hanks, to me, is more like a subdued, like, sort of everyman.
Like, he truly is the everyman. Kurt Russell walks that line where he can be, like... Every man, but he can also be a true romantic lead. He can be the badass action hero.
But he's like this every man who can turn into a badass.
Yes.
Which is the two movies that we have to talk about today.
But that's definitely a theme of both the films we're going to talk about today. It was where he goes from being Joe Average to being a hero.
Well, and I think that's a lot of the theme of a lot of movies that he chose. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, even Big Trouble in Little China, there's a little
He's
bit
a little
of that.
Out of his element. You know, he's a little in over his head, but he rises to the occasion. Yeah.
But he was just like a normal, like, you know, like a truck driver, you know? He talked a big game, though, in that movie, you know, and he's kind of like the underdog. But anyway, so let's get into it. So let's talk about Breakdown first, which is kind of later, because Breakdown is in 97. Executive Decision was 96.
Mm-hmm.
So this is after Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah,
this is
after those movies.
After movies like Overboard and after movies like, what are some of the other movies that he was in?
Soldier, You said The Best of Times, Tango and Cash, Escape from L.A., you know.
Yeah.
The Thing.
The Thing.
The Thing is one of the greatest horror science fiction. It's one of the greatest horror films of all time. It's one of the greatest science fiction films of all time.
Yes.
I mean, if you put that up with The Fly, I don't know which one I'd pick as being better because they're both nearly perfect movies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the thing. I could talk for hours just on how much I love The Thing.
Right. And just to talk a little bit about Kurt Russell's sort of career, he started as like a child Disney actor.
He did. Do you know what his first role was?
No.
It was in an Elvis film.
Wow. What, like one of those old like Elvis movies?
It was called It Happens at the World Fair.
Wow.
You know what he did in this movie?
No.
All he did was kick Elvis in the shin.
And so that's what he had to do. Show up to the set, kick Elvis in the shin.
Basically.
All right, thanks, buddy. We'll see you later.
Like he gets mad at Elvis and kicks him in the shin. And you can find the clips on YouTube. I mean, it's like little baby Kurt Russell getting mad at Elvis. Like 1950s, like cool Elvis. Right. And just wailing on his shin with a really well-placed kick.
Oh my God.
Hysterical.
Well, I think what was – and then – his first, like, sort of big role stepping out of the Disney was, like, Escape from L.A.
Well, it was Escape from New York. But
Escape from New York.
Let's talk about the Disney things for a minute. He was, like, a contract player for Disney when he was young. He was in movies like The World's Strongest Man, The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, when he was, like, 15, 16. So he was like a teen heartthrob.
Ah.
And then he got out of that. And went on to do adult roles.
In like the 70s, right?
Well, like the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
His first starring role, oddly enough, tied back to his first role as a kid, he played Elvis in a TV movie directed by John Carpenter.
Ah.
And that led to him becoming friends with John Carpenter, which led to Escape from New York.
Yep.
Then it led to The Thing and Big Trouble in Little China.
Yep.
And they're still friends to this day. They're kind of intertwined with each other now.
Yeah. He and John Carpenter, yeah. So let's talk about Breakdown.
Yes.
So this is after all of that, this is his career, but this movie by itself. So he's, you can tell this is a guy who's in like his late 40s, right? And the premise of the movie, he's driving his, car, breaks down.
He's with his wife.
He's in the middle of the desert, or like Moab, kind of area.
Yeah. He's basically on his way to California, going cross country, I think, with his wife.
And then his wife gets kidnapped. She gets a ride from a trucker to get down to the next restaurant to call a tow truck.
And she never makes it.
He finally figures out that it's just a couple wires. And then he realizes that his wife is missing.
Yes.
Now, the whole premise of the movie is rather simple.
It's real simple. Yeah, it's him trying to find out what happened to his wife.
Right, because he doesn't know where she is. Nobody knows where she is. The cops are like, well, you can, file a missing report, but we can't do anything after 24 hours. All this like kind of stuff. But you see, like, everything in this movie is all from his perspective.
Yes. You're with him the entire time.
Yes.
You don't know what's going on until he knows what's going on.
Right.
And that makes it tense. Like, it's kind of Hitchcockian in that way. It reminds me of, like, Hitchcock thrillers where it's just tense.
Yeah.
You don't quite know where it's going. It's not very complicated, but the tension's very high because you're as lost as he is throughout the film. You only learn things when he learns them, so you're right there with him emotionally through the entire film. And part of his great acting is because he's such an everyman.
Mm-hmm.
You buy into everything he's going through. Like, you want him to find his wife. You want him to be okay. And when it comes time for him to figure out what's going on and he becomes a man of action, because he can kind of roll from being – that Tom Hanks-esque everyman into more of a badass man of action, you buy it completely when it's time for that to happen.
Well, I mean, I love that you mentioned Hitchcockian, because immediately when I first started watching the movie, you start realizing, like, okay, here's the conflict. Here's what's going on. Here's the stuff. But I mean, it's like it's surreal. It's like it's really happening, because it's almost like everything's almost – it's not in real time, but it's almost in real time.
Yeah.
And you're seeing everything from his perspective. And, you have the, he goes to the diner and, the guys at the diner's like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Your wife's not here. She wasn't here.
Stop asking.
He runs and he finally catches up to the trucker. The trucker acts like, I've never seen you before in my life, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, who are you?
And that's almost a nightmarish kind of feeling.
Yes.
Where, like, you think something happened and no one else believes you. And everyone else is acting like it never happened. So then you wonder, well, is he crazy? Did it happen?
It was like Alfred. It was like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like a Twilight Zone episode where it's like, something normal and then like something abnormal.
Yes.
And then, like, everything turns surreal, and, like, your gut just turns inside out.
Yeah, it's you get this kind of constricting feeling from watching it, because you realize he is so out of his element, and you just want him to be okay. You want him to get to the bottom of what's going on. You want him and his wife to be safe, but the tension keeps getting ratcheted up.
Right.
And it makes the movie very tense. Luckily, the film's pretty short. It runs by at a very brisk 93 minutes, right. I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't waste time.
Right. It takes place in modern day, like 1996, 1997. Yeah. So like cell phones are real spotty coverage.
Yeah.
He realizes that he can't really rely on the cops or rely even on the people of the town. Yeah. He goes back to the diner and they're, he's asking so many questions. They're getting annoyed with him. And so it just becomes just like, he realizes, that he's got to do something himself. Yeah. And by the time he realizes that, he gets kidnapped himself.
Yeah. And you discover, and again, we talk about spoilers here on this podcast, guys. So if you haven't seen Breakdown and you don't want to be spoiled, watch it. It's a good, tense movie.
So... But what's funny about it is that when I watched it on like the Laserdisc, the scene where he gets knocked out,
yeah,
that was the time where the disc flipped.
Oh, nice! Yeah, that's a good
lights
bit of,
out, and then like the disc flipped.
So I want to point out this pretty cool. Ryan watched this movie on Laserdisc.
Widescreen Laserdisc.
Yeah, he's gotten into this retro format thing, which we've talked about on the show. This was his first. His first movie for the show on Laserdisc. So I think that's pretty badass.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. So watch it on my, and I have a projector that I watch it on and everything. So it's like,
aren't you really fancy?
Cool. Yeah, super cool. So, but it's like, it was really hard to watch because it's like everything, like as soon as you think that Kurt Russell, because he's chasing after these guys and he gets kidnapped. You realize that they want he gets away.
They basically think he has money,
right?
Like because he's the car he's driving at the beginning is a new car, but him and his wife are actually down on their luck. They're actually moving to California to start over, and pretty much all the money they had went into this new vehicle in their move. So they're pretty poor, but they don't look poor,
right?
And so these people hijack them, thinking they could extort them for money.
Yeah,
and then get rid of them later, not realizing that he's actually not wealthy at all.
Right. So J.T. Walsh.
The great character actor, J.T. Walsh.
Now, if you don't know who J.T. Walsh is, you know, because he's a character actor, you know movies that he's been in. He's the warden in Shawshank Redemption. Yes.
He's in a lot of things.
He was... he's in the Executive Decision too.
He's in several movies with Kurt Russell. I believe they were friends. Yeah.
He was first in Good Morning Vietnam, where he plays like the sergeant who tries to get him off the air whatever.
And so basically, J.T. Walsh is the trucker who's basically this ringleader of this little yokel local kidnapping ring.
Wait, J.T. Walsh wasn't in Shawshank Redemption. I am sorry, that was a miss. That was wrong of me to say.
I'm glad we caught it now, so people won't add at us on Twitter about that.
Yeah, I know.
But
sorry, folks.
But J.T. Walsh has been in a ton of things. He's in Tequila Sunrise. He's in Executive Decision. He's in a bunch of movies.
Yeah, and he always plays a guy who is a straight-laced guy who you don't like. He's the guy who he plays kind of a straight sort of villainous character. I don't like he does he ever I never really say I mean I know this episode is about Kurt Russell, but I don't think I've ever seen a movie where I've like been on J.T. Walsh's like, you know, where I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, I can't really think of any off the top of my head, but he's basically the ringleader of this kidnapping group. It's basically him and three other guys, and they basically conspire to do this to people in this part of the world.
Right.
And basically what happens is Kurt Russell basically ends up stowing away on the guy's truck.
Right.
And to me, this is the most chilling part about the movie. This part that really made me uncomfortable was when he goes back to the villain's home base, he realizes J.T. Walsh, the villain, this kidnapper, this murderer, this extortionist, is a normal guy. He's got a family. He's got a wife and a kid who he loves, takes care of. And they have no idea he does this.
Yeah. And it's just like... But... I mean, there's certain clues throughout the whole, like, sort of movie that, you know, they're behind the whole thing, but of all these missing people, right?
Yes.
First when he goes to the scene where he's reporting his wife missing.
It's kind of like the Lost Boys.
Yeah, like there's all of these missing persons, of these missing women there.
Which reminded me so much of the scenes of the Lost Boys where they're seeing like the lost or missing posters. Yeah. You're like, what is wrong with Sarah? Where all these people are disappearing.
Yeah.
And so basically to kind of move the plot explanation along, Kurt Russell, when he's at the villain's base, basically grabs a gun, rescues his wife. He finds his wife basically tied up in this guy.
Who's played by Kathleen Quinlan?
Which I'm sure I've seen her and stuff, but I cannot place where I've seen her.
She was in Event Horizon.
Oh, of course. Yeah, and one of the other kidnappers
too. Jack Noseworthy.
Yeah, what an amazing name. Jack Noseworthy, who plays one of the other kidnappers.
Yeah.
It was also in Event Horizon. Yes. I thought they looked familiar.
Yeah,
Thank you.
One of my notes for later. But we'll go,
it's fine. Okay.
It's okay.
It's casual. So basically,
he goes through this series of things. You see him go through these emotions. You see him go through. He's pinned against the wall. Mm-hmm. His wife is, you know, kidnapped. He's trying to do everything. He's get her back. He's trying to figure out ways. You see the struggle, the internal struggle that he's going through of what am I going to do? What am I going to do? How am I going to get this? And he's trying to figure out how am I going to get the advantage? How am I going to get the upper hand in this situation?
Even when he takes action, he still has the kind of vague, I'm in over my head quality.
But even when he does get the upper hand, he loses it very quickly.
Yeah, because he's just a normal guy. Right. Which I think is one thing that's very nice about this movie is he never stops being a normal guy.
Right. Like when he finally gets the gun, he's finally like he gives the guy the money or whatever money that he got from the bank.
Yeah.
He figures out a way to actually get away from him.
Yeah.
Then he has a gun, he tracks down the main villain, which is played by J.T. Walsh. His name is Red.
Yeah.
But he chases him down. Finds him, but realizes, like, oh, I can't, like, just show him my gun because he overhears the phone conversation where he hears his wife is, like, you know, many ways away. He's like, oh, well, we got to drive all night then. I don't care. We got to do it. So he decides, well, my wife is not here. She's somewhere else, and he's going to her, so I'm going to hitch a ride on his truck.
Yeah.
And then when he's on the truck, he drops the gun out of his, it falls out of his pants.
Yeah, and there's always moments where you think he's gonna really have control of it, and he always just barely hangs on to whatever he's got going on.
Right.
And to me, this movie illustrates what a great actor Kurt Russell is, because you're with him every step of the way.
Yes.
And if his performance didn't work, if you didn't like him, this whole movie would be insufferable. It would be so hard to watch if you didn't give a crap about the main character.
No.
But you like him so much that you want him to succeed.
You are rooting for him the whole time. Like the second half of the movie is just like so suspenseful. I mean, it's like it's part, you know, sort of surreal, sort of like Twilight Zone. It's part sort of like suspense because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's part like chase thriller. Yeah.
Yeah. It's part, you know, kind of thriller in that way. And it's part sort of like mystery because he's still trying to figure out, like, who did everything?
And why this is happening to him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what is really going on, and how is he going to get, you know, out of these situations and stuff like that? Then it becomes just a, you know, power struggle. When they get to the Red's, you know, house, he has to figure out, like, you know, his wife is, like, locked in the basement in, like, a freezer. Yeah. Like, how am I going to get
her out in time?
Her out and them
and
out,
not get overwhelmed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it turns into, like, this great chase scene with like them chasing them down, and you get lots of great practical car stunts, and and there's a little bit of fist fighting.
Yeah,
it's got some great like old school like action and stunt work in it, which you don't see much anymore.
Right.
I mean, the whole movie has got a good tense quality to it. I mean, it's not one of his classic films.
No,
I mean, it's not a classic Kurt Russell. It's not The Thing. It's not Big Trouble in Little China. But it is a solid time at the movies.
I mean, you can just see in his eyes and in his character how much he's like just running on adrenaline. Yeah. Doing whatever he can.
He's in the moment. Like, he acts in the moment in this. Like, yes. He is so in the moment of what's happening. He's so good in everything, but he's especially good in this.
Well, and there's very few characters in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at look at the difference. I'm going to show Esri my list here.
Nothing like visual cues for audio podcast.
Of my list of, you know, my cast. I always have a cast list in front of me.
It's about a third of the size of the one for Executive Decision. Yeah,
between Breakdown and Executive Decision
has a lot of characters in it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like you can count on your hand. I mean, it's like 12 people, and really most of it is just the three or four characters that's in the movie.
Yeah. Again, you spend the entire movie with Kurt Russell.
Yeah. I mean, like, some of these are like Cowboy and Bank. Like,
Guy eating an egg sandwich in diner.
Right. Here. Like, Deputy. Like, the Deputy was in one scene.
Yes.
You know? So, it is him, like, the entire time.
Yeah. And that's the thing about at this time period, Kurt Russell was at the height of his movie star ability. Like, he was a movie star at this point. Like, I'm sure we'll go into this later, but this movie was pretty successful for him. It was critically pretty popular. It made money.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a movie star, and he showed it in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, people at this time, Kurt Russell was really beloved by the general movie going public. I mean, guys like me still remember how great he is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But at this time, the general population was like, yay, Kurt Russell.
Right. And the only other, like, sort of big character in this movie was Kathleen Quinlan and J.T. Walsh.
And they weren't big names.
No, J.T. Walsh is still, like we said, like a character actor.
Yeah, like, right? If you look at the poster, there's no one else on this poster but Kurt Russell.
Right.
Yeah, and that's even true of Executive Decision, to give you an idea of how big he was at the time. On both these movies, on the theatrical artwork, it is literally, you know, Kurt Russell's face is the artwork.
Well, not entirely for Executive Decision.
Well, there's a plane, but we'll get into that.
No.
Is there someone else on it? Oh, we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Talk about that later.
Yeah, I got a fun story about that later.
it's mostly Kurt. I mean, he basically carries the movie, and he has to carry the movie. And for somebody to carry the movie and to be, like, really profitable and not just, like, break even or like, whatever, and be, like what we're talking about it today, like, how beloved we are, it just shows you how good of a movie that it is and how good of a actor that Kurt Russell is. Now, I will tell you, it's a really kind of hard movie to watch.
It's not fun.
It's like, it's like other movies, like, say, like Ransom, or other movies like The Fugitive.
Yeah, it's
like,
got the kind of tense quality to it.
Really tense, really, really hard. You're really rooting for the underdog, and it's really kind of gritty too.
And it's so lean that there's no levity. And, like, The Fugitive has, like, Tommy Lee Jones cracking jokes, you know. But this is just lean 90 minutes of Kurt Russell just trying to survive, and it's tense.
There's hardly any comic relief.
Yeah.
There's hardly any, you know, sort of, like, whatnot going on. Like, you know, it really just picks you up. And
basically, he jokes with his wife at the beginning to establish that they love each other and that they're likable people. And, again, they nail that in, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And you immediately like them, and then, boom, things just go bad.
Yeah.
It's a lean, mean movie.
Yeah.
And if you're into that, it'll scratch that itch. But it's not necessarily what I'd call a super fun time.
No,
but it is a solid movie.
Yeah, and I mean, I bought this movie before watching it, and now I'm like, maybe I should rethink, you know, buying movies before I see them, because, you know, you really want to buy movies that you want to watch over and over.
Yeah, but
again,
you never know. You may get that itch sometimes, and Laserdiscs are fairly inexpensive now.
Well, I will say, I didn't know how the movie ended. You do think, I will kind of, like, spoil it a little bit. The good guy does win in the end.
Yeah.
And the one thing about the movie is that it doesn't, you know, a lot of movies, like, have, like, super a lot of twists and turns. This does not have a lot
of twists. It's very straightforward.
Yeah, it is.
Which is kind of amazing, because it is still very tense. It is, again, the phrase Hitchcockian. It's a thriller. But it's not like serpentine. It's not a lot of twisty turny things.
Yeah.
It's just, and that's kind of amazing that it's still so tense while still being so straightforward and basic.
Right.
I mean, it shows quality filmmaking.
Yeah.
That can inspire those feelings in you while still being a very simple story.
Yeah. Well, because I think that they tug into this idea that this could happen to you.
Yes.
This is your loved one. Your wife could be the one tied up. You could be the one that's like up against the wall.
You just have no idea what's happening.
No idea what's going on. Yeah. Like it's really, and I think that's
why it struck a nerve with people.
Because he knows that, I mean, even if he just, you know, tries to go to the cops or tries to go anywhere, like his wife is going to be, you know, dead. They're still going to be chasing after him. Like they're still, like it's just never ending.
Yeah. You know, it's a classic definition of a thriller. It's tense. It's enjoyable if that's what you want to watch.
Right.
If you want a thriller, Breakdown is a quality thriller worth your time.
But yes, it is kind of like watching like Cape Fear.
Yes, you'll be tense the entire time.
Yeah, it's a little disturbing, little gut-wrenching at times.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to something that's a little more fun.
Yes, it's definitely more absurd.
Executive decision.
Yeah, or as I like to think of it, as Kurt Russell plays Jack Ryan, but they don't call him Jack Ryan.
Exactly. It's exactly.
It is totally a Tom Clancy movie.
It is. It's very Tom Clancyan for sure. Yeah. It is done in 1996, produced by Joel Silver,
and it shows. It's the slick looking, expensive movie.
You want to see a '90s action movie? You know that deals with the president having to make decisions or a plane
executive
having to be
decisions, even
executive decisions, excellent decisions. I mean, it's just the world is going to end. A lot of people are going to die unless somebody does this one thing or nobody, you know.
Well, I think I can go through the plot for you pretty quickly, pretty succinctly.
All right, try.
Okay, I'm going to say, okay, I realize that we're now in 2019, so I got to say something.
All right.
This movie is not very woke. The villains of the film are Islamic extremists who basically want to
This is also pre-9/11.
Yes, pre-9/11, so keep that in mind. They want to hijack a plane with a bomb on it. That they put there.
It's not a bomb.
Yes.
Well, sort of.
It's a bomb that's loaded with nerve agent.
Yes.
They want to crash it into D.C. and basically kill the eastern seaboard of America.
Yeah.
With this nerve agent.
So it's loaded with like this extreme chemical weapon that's going to basically wipe out the eastern seaboard.
Yeah.
So there is an explosive device that is the catalyst to disperse this nerve.
So basically, you've got stereotypical villainous Islamic terrorists. So again, it's not very racially sensitive. Hijacking a plane,
right? A commercial jet.
So it is a little weird to see this in 2019 because it makes you think of 9/11.
Right.
But you just think of it as a movie of its time. It's not meant to be anything other than for entertainment. Right. So moving forward, the plot is. They realize they have to basically stop the hijacking, but they're already in the air.
Right.
So they use an experimental plane to get commandos onto the jet in midair.
Right.
And Kurt Russell plays an analyst who knows about the head terrorists. Right. He goes with them to help them plan. And through a series of unfortunate accidents, he ends up on the plane with them.
Right.
And so he has to kind of become going to get a little bit of average guy becomes a hero again
right.
to help these special forces guys stop the terrorists.
Right. Yeah. Like he's just a sort of like criminal expert.
He's like
a
profiler. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so he goes along the plane because there's limited amount of time to try to brief the team on the people, or he knows about the people that are on board.
And he's going to be in radio communication with them in this experimental plane while they board and help them.
Right.
But things go wrong.
So in this, what they call Operation Hail Mary, is they're going to fly this like bomber jet, basically the stealth bomber jet, underneath a 747. They're going to extend a sleeve to like the hatch.
Pressurize it.
They're going to pressurize it. Then they're going to open the hatch from underneath without anybody on the plane knowing.
Yeah.
And then they're going to board all of the, Special Force commandos, including Steven Seagal.
Well, spoiler. We'll get to that in a second.
So that's the plan. Yeah. I'm just telling you what the plan is. And then after that, they're going to close the hatch. Yeah. And then Kurt Russell is still supposed to be in the bomber plane. Yeah. That was the plan.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of falling. He had to help get somebody back in.
And he ends up basically getting to where he can't get back down in time. So he has to get onto the jet.
Right. Well, and the plane start the 747 basically is taking on the weight of this other plane and then starts to like drop.
Break apart. But, yeah. let's stop there and backtrack for a minute. You mentioned something that we got to go back to talk about. Right. What name did you say?
Steven Seagal.
Steven, hard to kill, marked for death, Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, you know, himself, Steven Seagal, is in this movie, and he's not the number one billed guy. He's got the and credit after all the other actors.
He's not even listed in the opening credits.
Yeah. No, he's at the very end. Like when they go through.
When they're going the opening credits, he's not listed.
Is he not? Okay, no. I thought he was. Maybe he's not. I must have. No. Yeah, I'll take your word for it. But yeah, he basically plays the head of the commandos, and you think he's going to be like Steven Seagal.
Like it's setting up. Like you know, you can already kind of tell in the movie that like, okay, I'm watching this, and Steven Seagal, they're in the you know like the closed off. You know, room where they're hatching the plan. Steven Seagal hatches his plan. And already, like, there's some tension between Steven Seagal, whose name in the movie is Lieutenant Colonel Austin Travis.
Yeah.
And Kurt Russell's character is Dr. David Grant.
Because there's a prologue in the film where they have a mission. And see, it's actually framed like a Steven Seagal movie that fails because of bad intel they got from Kurt Russell's character.
Or what they thought was bad intel.
From Kurt Russell's character. So there's tension between those two characters. So they're on this plane together.
So, but you can tell there's some tension between the intel guy and the guy on the field. So Seagal's already got this kind of like chip on the shoulder, like, who's this guy? Like, he knows everything, blah, blah, blah.
And he is pure Seagal mode in this. He's like whispery and trying to be all kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
And his energy is so weird against Kurt Russell.
Yeah. So, like, yeah.
It's really kind of weird to see them share the same space on film together.
But you kind of get the idea that, like, it's setting up to be kind of like
a buddy movie.
Well, no, not a buddy movie, but like, you're going to be the a-hole, and you're going to be the other guy, and then they're just going to fight in between.
Yeah, bicker.
Yeah.
And we're going to get it done, and we're going to gain respect for each other. But the movie does something really interesting. And the reason I stopped you was because as they're doing the sleeve transfer, as the plane's breaking apart, Steven Seagal is the last man up because he wants to get all his guys on first. And he's trying to get Kurt Russell down. He realizes he can't make it. So Steven Seagal valiantly closes the hatch on the jet plane. The sleeve.
Because somebody has to close the hatch.
Somebody
from
has
below.
To close it from below. Yeah. He closes it, and the plane breaks off, and he gets sucked out and dies.
Right. Like he basically sacrifices himself.
Yeah. Steven Seagal, who is on, you're right. He's on the poster for this movie.
Yes.
He dies 20 minutes into it, and my funny story about this: no one knew he died. You don't see that in the trailer.
No.
In the trailer, they show him doing like the thumbs up and like it's all dramatic. You think he's part of the movie. Yeah. So I saw it opening weekend with my dad.
Okay.
Because we like Kurt Russell. We like Steven Seagal. Back then we did.
Right.
And when Steven Seagal got sucked out, literally there was three guys behind me who were like, oh my God, what the hell just happened? Like literally they shouted at the grown men, shouted at the screen because suddenly the guy they thought was the hero of the movie died.
Well, I mean,
that's some Janet Leigh and Psycho kind of stuff.
Yeah, you have to remember, I mean, Steven Seagal was a really big movie star this time.
And they kept it hidden. No one knew that he died that quickly in the film, and it blew those poor guys' mind.
Yeah. Also on board was one of the engineers who designed the sleeve and the hatch, which was played by Oliver Platt.
I love Oliver Platt.
Yeah.
Great character actor.
He plays Dennis Cahill, like the engineer, and he kind of gets trapped up there too to try to help the team do all this kind of stuff. So there's a... They're trying to like the guy that's the defuse the bomb. He's got a cracked vertebra. The guy and he's an awesome Joe Morton.
Yeah, Joe Morton. Let's point out who Joe Morton is. He was the character in Terminator 2, who basically worked for Cyberdyne Systems, who found the Terminator chip, found the arm, and was building a Terminator. He's the guy that Linda Hamilton tries to kill in Terminator 2, who ends up helping them. He's an amazing character actor who I wish was in more movies.
Yeah, I wish. He's a really great actor, and he plays the guy who's the like sort of the bomb diffuser.
Yeah, his name's Cappy, which I think is a great character name.
Yeah, Cappy, Sergeant Campbell Cappy Matheny, but they just call him Cappy.
Yeah.
John Leguizamo plays Captain Carlos Rat Lopez, and he kind of plays the de facto sort of like leader.
Yeah, he's sort of a badass in this movie.
After Steven Seagal gets sucked out of the thing there. And
so just imagine you're going to see a Steven Seagal movie and suddenly you're watching John Leguizamo action hero.
And his name is Captain Carlos Rat Lopez. Or Carlos Rat Lopez.
That's the most generic name I could possibly think of for a Hispanic character.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, okay, so the whole sort of action, movie, quarter is like, well, let's find out. Let's put in cameras. Let's try to look around. Let's try to figure out
where the bomb is. Who's got the trigger for it?
Yeah.
And how are we going to neutralize these seven guys with machine guns in this tiny space before they set off the bomb?
And the radios, they don't have the radios to communicate.
Lost the radios in the transfer. Yeah.
Yeah. They lost the SATCOMs that they can't talk back to the Pentagon. So the Pentagon doesn't even know that they are on the plane.
Yeah. So then they've got a limited window before they reach the United States, and the president will make the decision just to shoot the plane down.
Right. So when they're about to enter, U.S. airspace, is when the F-14 bombers come in, F-14, fighter jets come in and are like, basically, hey, you need to divert, and they don't divert. So then they get like a new mission to like shoot it down.
Yeah.
That's the executive decision.
Yeah. And I got to say, man, the film of them sneaking around the plane, trying to find the bomb, trying to stay hidden, it's super interesting. It's so fun to me because it's got that fun kind of tension. It's tense like Breakdown, but not in the same where it's not dread. Yeah. It's almost like a really cool game of hide and seek.
Yeah.
Where there's
on a 747.
Yeah, where they're sneaking around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of like G.I. Joe stuff. They're sneaking around trying to hide from the bad guys.
Yeah.
And we had to mention that on the plane is a stewardess who helps
flight attendant.
Flight officer. I'm sorry, 2019 flight attendant played by Halle Berry.
Yeah, she plays Jean, the flight attendant, the helpful flight attendant.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of romantic tension between her and Kurt Russell.
So there's only two people on board that even know that Special Forces are on board. One is the co-pilot, because immediately when they board the plane, when the Special Forces board the plane, there's an error or there's something going on, so they have to go into that engine room, and they have to go to that apartment. He goes in, and Kurt Russell sort of reveals himself.
And he's like, shh.
Yeah, right. And then so he sees the other guys, and they flash their American flag.
Yeah.
That like, hey, we're with you, So he goes, okay. So then he just quietly goes back up and says, oh, yeah, it's a broken board. And then the other person is Halle Berry. So when Kurt Russell goes up above everything in the elevator to try to see, in the elevator shaft to try to look at these cameras and to try to locate who the ringleader of this group is, because he knows what he kind of looks like. He can also kind of hear his voice. He knows his voice. He sees Halle Berry. Or he sees Gene, I should say. And so
it's Halle Berry.
Yeah, they see each other, basically. And she's just like, oh, wait, there's other people on board that I didn't know about. But,
Yeah, basically, you have this kind of tense where they're trying to find the guy with the trigger. They're trying to find the bomb.
Yeah.
And they've got a very limited time to do it. And when they do find all these people, they got to figure out a way to neutralize them and take out the terrorists.
Yeah.
It's fun, man. It's just there's all these little things where they set up a plan and then the little plan goes wrong, and they have to pull back and reevaluate.
Yeah,
and it does a really good job of making you think the movie's going to go one way, and then something happens where they have to stop, regroup, and do something else.
Right,
the movie constantly surprises you with the way it twists and turns in that respect.
Well, and there was one scene where Kurt Russell. Basically, they decide that they're a man down. That they need another trigger man.
Yeah,
and they're like, "We need another guy." And he's like, "All right, what do you want me to do?"
And but again, to his credit, he's not confident. He's like, you can tell he's scared.
Yeah,
he doesn't hesitate. He's like,
right. No, I mean, he doesn't say anything, but he's like, he's not super confident. Like, all right, yeah, let's do it. He's just like, all right, what do you want me to do? It's like very sort of under his breath, like, yeah. I'm going to have to do this for my country. Yeah. I'm going to have to do this for all of these lives.
Yeah, I've got to do the right thing. I'm scared, but I'm going to do the right thing.
Exactly.
And he nails it so well.
Yeah.
He's such a good actor.
Yeah. I thought that was a very, you know, pivotal scene about who his character was, like about who David Grant was in the film and that sort of thing.
And so, yeah, so basically they eventually find who they think is the trigger man with the bomb.
Right.
And they set up their attack.
Right.
And they're getting really close to being in America, like within minutes. Right. And so they do their attack, like they neutralize.
No. David Grant acts by himself to go after him.
Oh, yeah. And he realizes the guy he thought was the trigger man isn't.
Right.
And he exposes himself.
Right.
And so then it all becomes like a little
bit.
And
then it's like they're forced that they have to attack.
Yes.
Because now they have the element of surprise. And, you know, Carlos Rat Lopez, I feel bad. Decides that, no, now we're going to attack because now we got them under surprise. Yeah. Now we're going to follow up our previous plan we did before and, like, try to get everybody down.
Yeah, and it's this pretty hectic action sequence of them scrambling to try to make this work. And it's pretty intense of them basically trying to neutralize these guys. Kurt Russell eventually sees the actual guy with the trigger, basically dives over seats to get him. Like, he literally dives over, like, rows of seats to catch him. It's a pretty cool visual.
Yeah, and the special forces are, like, shooting guys in the aisles, like, right there.
Yeah.
The guys are, like, shooting out the walls of the plane.
Yeah, like, well, a window gets broken, and like, one of the, like, there gets to be, like, a pressurized, an unpressurized hole in the plane happens.
Yep.
Some people get sucked out.
Yeah.
It's all, it escalates very, very well.
Yeah, the ending sort of escalates, like, very at the end. Like, it's a very sort of, it's a good payoff to have all this suspense sort of in the middle.
Yeah.
You know? But they thought they shot the main guy.
The main bad guy.
Yeah.
Dying breath, he basically shoots the two pilots.
Yeah.
So the plane starts
to go. No, because he gets up and then he shoots the
two pilots, and then John Leguizamo's character kills him. But he shoots the two pilots. And earlier in the film, they established that Kurt Russell's character was learning to be a pilot.
Yeah.
So they established in Act 1, Kurt Russell's basically a pilot in training. So he's like, well, I guess I got to land this, you know, 747 now.
Yeah.
And so the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, and his radio, because the guy shot, you know, the whole thing, because basically it was a desperate attempt to turn the plane, like, well, if we don't have our explosive device to distribute this nerve agent, then I'm going to shoot the pilot so the plane will crash and it will still, you know, distribute this nerve agent.
And let's go back for a moment and mention, while this is going on, there's also a subplot with Cappy and Oliver Platt's character trying to defuse this complicated bomb.
Yeah.
Cappy gets injured and is basically tied to a gurney, tied to like a stretcher board the entire time. He's trying to verbally walk Oliver Platt's technician character through defusing this complicated bomb. And they got a lot of fun interplay, a lot of fun tension. Yeah. So it's a good little B plot to go along with what we were talking about.
Right.
But the last 15 minutes of the movie are basically Halle Berry and Kurt Russell trying to land this plane. It reminded me a lot of, like, Airport.
Yeah.
And those 70s disaster movies.
Yeah.
And
an Airplane, which was like a parody.
Which was a parody of Airport.
Airport, where they're, like, trying to land a plane. Because, I mean, it's to be up in a plane, it's like, okay, how are we going to land? And that's sort of the ending. Some people didn't really, you know, like the ending because it's like we got rid of the main, you know, head guy, but now we have this other threat. Yeah. And that's the thing about action movies always is like you get rid of the main thing that you thought, but then you're faced with another main thing, right?
Yeah,
so you have to act immediately. So everything sort of compounds on each other.
But I got to say, I don't think the landing the plane is as dramatically interesting as what came before.
No.
So the movie kind of deflates in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's still good. It's still an enjoyable film.
Right.
But it really loses a lot of its gumption in the last 10 minutes or so.
Well, I will say, I mean, I'll go ahead and kind of ruin my notes now, but I did read that the landing was that Kurt Russell did was actually probably really accurate. And it's probably, they say, the most accurate of like any film, like trying to land that big up a plane from somebody who is that inexperienced, who has a little experience. You know, he knew enough to know what the, like, there's a landing speed. Yeah. And he knew enough that, like, oh, I can have flaps.
I've got some inside information, okay, information about that, too. So.
Yeah, Kurt Russell is a
licensed pilot. Yeah, he's a licensed pilot. Pilot, yeah.
Yeah. I found that in my notes as well, but you probably knew that already.
Yeah, which I thought that was pretty interesting, because that's why it's accurate, because he was probably like, this is how this works.
Yeah, like, this warning's going off, so I got to have my flaps. Like, okay, and then I'm getting down too low, so this warning goes off, I got to have my landing gear down.
And those details help sell the reality of it. It really does.
It really does. So, and he knew, like, not enough to that he could turn around the plane to reorient to fight, so he just orients on his airport that he knows, and so he lands at his airport, which turns out to be a disaster because it's like a small airport.
Yeah,
winds up taking out the lights. And,
yeah, he wrecks other planes that are smaller.
Exactly.
The movie's I like the movie. It's got a little bit of fat on it. The end kind of just sputters out, and the beginning takes a little long to get going. But the middle part of it is really good.
I really thought that there was a kind of a flashback scene of how the, you know, main villain gets to be the main
villain. It's not even necessary, really.
Well, but the footage that was shot, they kind of did it almost like a dream sequence or like a flashback. But to me, I think maybe that was in the original, like, film. I mean, you know how Joel Silver films are. They're, like, super long.
Yeah, and then he's just like, chop that up. We don't need all that once it's done.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the main movie. Like, he had all of these subplots and had all these other things going, which you really didn't even need.
Yeah, you could have trimmed out a lot of that stuff. So you could have trimmed out 10 minutes from the beginning really easily.
Yeah.
And the movie's long. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yeah.
You could have easily checked that 10 minutes at the beginning. When I say hacked, I mean, there's some pointless stuff in the beginning of the movie that you just don't need.
Yeah. I'd rather see it like 180 minutes or something like that, you know, 170. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I think that, like we said, like, Kurt Russell is fantastic in it.
Yeah.
Halle Berry plays an excellent like role. I think John Leguizamo.
Well, all the character actors do great. Like, you mentioned that J.T. Walsh is in
this. J.T. Walsh plays a congressman who is, like, on the plane, who tries to negotiate.
Yeah, he's basically, he's Ellis from Die Hard.
Right.
Yeah. Hans Booby. You know, he's that guy, basically. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to try to talk my way out of this, and ends up, you know, dying.
Right. They just use him as a pawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a little racially weird in 2019, but it's still a solid movie that's just a little fatty.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, but it's still a fun movie to watch.
It is.
It's still, because, you know, it's a challenge. You know, it's Special Forces. I will say it was sort of endorsed by the Armed Forces. Because there are movies, like, I don't know if some people know, some people in the know, and some people don't. Whenever there's a movie dealing with, you know, any of the armed forces of the United States, there are movies that are endorsed by them, and there are movies that are not endorsed by them. Case in point of example, McHale's Navy, not endorsed by the United States Army. In the Army now, not endorsed by the Army.
Yeah.
But there's movies like this that are endorsed because it paints
the military in a positive way.
Yeah,
light.
It makes it not paints the military in a negative way.
And I got to say, the plane effects with the fighter pilots and the stealth bomber are all very good.
Right.
I mean, all that stuff, you think it would be dated. It's really not.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a solid movie. It's worth seeing. Especially if you're a Kurt Russell fan, you've never seen it. It's definitely worth seeing with other Kurt Russell films.
And it's definitely, for the time period, I mean, for what they had, is very plausible. I mean,
yeah,
very, very plausible. And you know, I think that, you know, it's a great ride. It's a great action movie, you know, ride where, you know, like, kind of like Die Hard or kind of, you know, Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger. Like, we talked,
it definitely would make a great triple feature with all those films.
Right.
So,
because, like, I just want to point out, Die Hard came out in 98. Die Hard 2 came out in 1990.
Die Hard came out in 1986.
It did? Okay.
Yeah.
Die Hard 2 came out 1990. Patriot Games came out in 92. Clear and Present Danger came out in 1994. So, when this movie came out in 1996.
Yeah. It's definitely of those movies for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that that's what kind of makes these movies. I think that that's, you know, when Hollywood sees that certain movies are popular, certain movies act, that's what they sort of gravitate to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So let's try to bring it back around. So let's talk about, okay, again, as we always do on this show, if you were going to rent these from the video store, okay, would you keep Breakdown an extra day or would you get it back early?
Get it back early. I've seen it. I don't want to see it again. I don't want to go through the emotional turmoil again.
Yeah. I'll actually say the same because while I liked it, I don't think I'll watch it again. It's actually one of the few Kurt Russell movies I haven't seen.
Uh-huh.
So I was actually really excited to see it, and it's good, but I don't feel the need to revisit it.
Yeah.
And what about executive decision? Would you keep it an extra day and pay the late fee, or would you get it back quickly?
Keep it again.
I'd watch it again.
Watch it again, man. It's fun. Like,
it is a fun movie.
Pop some popcorn, you know, like sit back in your chair, get you a big glass of cola and enjoy it.
It's a little bit, it's a bit of a junk food movie, but it's fun junk food.
Yeah, it is.
All
right. So I have actually a lot of facts. All right,
oh,
I'll try to get through them really quickly. Okay.
No worries, man.
So
I like this part, so take your time.
So, all right. Breakdown. It's very similar to me, like The Fugitive that we mentioned, which came out in 93. It's very also The Vanishing came out in 1993.
Which is very similar to The Vanishing, for sure. Yeah.
And Ransom, which came out in 1996.
Give me back my son!
Yeah.
I'm Mel Gibson. I'm problematic in 2019.
So, I think, I mean, all of these movies, and I don't know what when did... I'll have to look it up probably, but when did Tom Hanks' movie, where he's stranded on the island?
Castaway was like, I don't know.
Anyway.
99 maybe?
I don't know. I just thought of that movie as like man against the elements or man against, you know, like ordinary man sort of like rising to the occasion of what he's sort of up against, you know, because it's just like him. And I think there was just like a string, like I said, I wanted to like sort of connect the dots between the thread of.
I think there's something there to that. Yeah, I think Castaway is sort of the end of that curve because then you see the repercussions of the aftermath of that, and all those early films never dealt with the aftermath of the trauma of going through these things.
Right.
Like, so these were still kind of like almost like G.I. Joe movies in a way where it was all about the hero and every man rising up and being a hero. You never thought about the trauma that he dealt with after it was over with.
Yeah, PTSD and all that kind of stuff. All right. So Bruce Willis, Dennis Quaid, Ed Harris, Mel Gibson, and Richard Gere were all considered for the role of Jeff Taylor.
And here's something I want to say. And Jeff Taylor was Kurt Russell's character.
Yeah.
We didn't say that earlier.
Yeah.
But that's Kurt Russell. And I'm going to say something kind of controversial.
Yeah.
They all could have done it. Now, would they have been as good as Kurt Russell? I don't know.
Would we have rooted for Bruce Willis as much?
It's hard to say.
Would we have rooted for Dennis Quaid as much? Could Dennis Quaid really sell being a badass?
That's fair. But a lot of times I can't see anyone else in a role besides the actor who played it. This movie is just... It's just slick enough and just generic enough in ways that I could see other actors slotted into that role. And it may not be, it'd be different, but I could see it.
Yeah. So the original opening for the script shows Jeff Taylor as a photographer in an unnamed war-torn area. He blames himself for the death of a woman upon returning to America, quits freelancing, and takes a job in San Diego, California.
Yeah. So
it's like...
That's why they're poor at the beginning of Breakdown.
Yeah, because it's like he's already gone through like this stuff, and he's like, you know, I've gone through this hard life. Like, this is emotionally turmoil for me, so I want to go to something that's easier, something that's like doesn't have as much drama.
I gotta say, if they established he had been in war torn areas, it would have explained a little more of his resilience.
Yeah,
but you don't really need it. It is not quite necessary.
Yeah, I think just dropping you off in the middle of the desert. Just like, hey, we're moving on to our new life. I think that's enough. You know, he's got a brand new Jeep. They're moving on to their new life. You know, they're going the slow road, you know, enjoying the sights along the way.
The beauty of Breakdown is in the movie's simplicity for sure.
In the script, there's another scene after the bridge climax with Jeff and Amy. back at the farm. Amy is the wife of Jeff Taylor, Amy Taylor. Back at the farm talking to the FBI. The film finishes with the line by Amy, "Next time we fly."
That's so bad.
This deemed out of place and was dropped. Okay, so I have trouble with the ending. I don't know how to talk about it without spoiling it.
Well, we can talk about spoilers.
But here's the thing. When you end with the main character falling off a bridge to his death.
The bad guy.
Nobody's around. Then Amy Taylor takes even more revenge on him by, like, putting the truck into gear that's falling off the bridge. So it definitely falls on him and, like,
crushes
him.
Well, they kind of implied that he may have survived the fall. Like, he's crippled, but he moves. She sees him, like, flinch down below, and she's like, uh-uh, you're dead.
Right.
And drops a semi-truck on him because it was the 90s and all villains had to die excessive deaths.
Right. And then they just lay there in the middle of the road, like, in this, like, sort of adrenaline embrace, like, you know, like, it's all over. But I don't know. It still leaves me a little bit uncomfortable because you realize that, like, you realize that whole time Kurt Russell's, like, or Jeff Taylor is, like, by himself and there's no cops around. Nobody's with him. Nobody's on his side.
Yeah, nobody knows what happened.
Nobody really knows what's happened. And he's just, like, they're just still there. Like, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't make you feel very comfortable. Yeah,
I don't think the movie wants you to think about it too much. I think it wants to get in and get out, you know.
Yeah. They want you to know that it's over.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. It makes me feel bad for, like, society. Like, like if that happened to me, I would want some support from our local, you know, authorities and, you know, FBI and all this other kind of thing.
It just it doesn't see it out in a more it doesn't have that natural progression of what would happen next.
Well,
it
and
just
ends right, and I think that's why they probably added that scene about you know. But I think next time we would fly. I mean, that's kind of a funny, joking line.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have added that, but I mean, I would like to at least see like all the cops show around and like,
have like cops come.
And maybe they're sitting on the back of an ambulance or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. But you still get a feeling of isolation by the end of it. And so the tension never really breaks.
Yeah. In the script, So Kurt Russell, when they filmed this movie, Kurt Russell was helicoptered in and out of the areas of shooting so he could be with his family in Los Angeles
at
night.
He is a big family man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one thing about Kurt. He hasn't worked as much as other actors because he'll just take 2 years off to be with his wife and kids.
Yeah.
And now his grandchildren.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay if he doesn't do, you know, and he probably, if you look at his filmography, he only does about one movie a year.
Sometimes it's one every 2 years because he just doesn't care.
No.
Like, he's not one of those guys where he has to make movies. He likes doing movies, but only when he feels like it.
Yeah. And if it's something that really catches his attention that he really wants to do.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, he can afford that luxury. I mean, really, I think. Yeah.
It's also why his filmography is full of a lot of pretty good movies, too, because he's choosy.
So, Kathleen, we mentioned before, Kathleen Quinlan and Jack Noseworthy later appear in Event Horizon. The budget, the other thing I was going to say, the Jeep in the movie, for everyone that would like to know, because I'm a car guy, it's a 1996 Jeep Grand Cherokee.
It does seem pretty nice.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very great car, great engine.
It was top of the line at the time,
I'm sure. Yeah, it was. CD player and all that.
They mentioned that's a plot point. You're right. They mentioned that, yeah.
Which I first thought it was going to be like, you know, like, oh, this is, you know, his car won't start or it's like falling apart. Like, this is really bad publicity for Jeep. But then you realize
you find out
later.
They sabotaged it,
It wasn't the Jeep's fault at all.
Yeah.
So the budget was $36 million. The box office made $50.2 million.
Which, again, at the time, that's all you had to do to have a hit back then because times were different.
Right. And it's just like, it's one of those things that's like, even if it did $50 million at the box office, still got video rental, right?
Yeah.
So it's like.
And it was big on videotape.
Here's that video that we missed because we watched this other great, awesome movie that came out during this time. So we'll watch this movie tonight.
Yeah. That movie was big for Kurt Russell at the time. I remember it being a very popular rental at the time.
Yeah. Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars out of 4, calling it a taut, skillful, and surgically effective. For most of its length, breakdown functions so efficiently, we put logic on hold and go with the action. Russell makes a convincing Dodge weary everyman Breakdown is a fine thriller, and its ending is unworthy of it. So he too, I read through his whole like thing, and I don't really read through the entire, you know, breakdown of movies, like breakdown. But yeah, he really didn't like the ending. He thought, kind of like me, that like it's kind of unnerving.
Well, you know? Well, and the ending also it goes bigger than the rest of the film.
Yeah,
like the ending almost needed to be smaller than it was. I mean, there's car crashes and like fist fights. It's a little out of place with the very kind of taut thriller that it was before.
Yeah, it's he called it like the audience like winced or something, like whatever.
Yeah,
And it has an 80% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. So
yeah. I mean, it's a well-made film.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's worthy. If that's what you want to watch, you want to watch a really good thriller that's really going to, you know, tug at your emotions, really. Yeah.
And not take too much time.
Yeah.
Again, sometimes when you watch a lot of movies, it's nice to watch a movie that's only 90 minutes.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to Executive Decision. Said it was produced by Joel Silver, who produced Die Hard, Last Boy Scout, Hudson Hawk.
And it shows. It looks like a Joel Silver movie through and through.
Okay, so originally, Austin Travis was supposed to die due to low cabin pressure causing his head to explode.
That would have been amazing. Oh, my God.
Steven Seagal refused to shoot the scene for fear of his fans would not like it. So Stuart Baer, the director, insisted he must do it as scripted, though not real. Though Steven Seagal held up filming for a few days and argued that the scene was not realistic. Finally, after a threat of contractual breach, Steven Seagal agreed and a new death scene was scripted.
And really, he's just sucked out. I mean, it's bloodless, but it's still surprising.
Yeah. But I mean, so I don't know if you know this next part, but this totally explains why Steven Seagal was only in the movie for like the first 20 minutes.
Okay, well, hit me.
During the mid-90s, there were rumors of sexual harassment and domestic violence starting to circulate around Steven Seagal. Oh, yeah.
He's a scumbag.
With his ex-wife coming out and accusing him of beating her, rumor has it that Kurt Russell refused to work with Steven Seagal for this reason. Hence, Steven Seagal's early death scene was dropped from as he was dropped from production. And it is not listed in the opening credits. It is speculated that John Leguizamo's character was expanded to take over. So
they swapped him out.
Yeah.
And I got to say, that just illustrates again what you always hear about Kurt Russell. He's supposedly one of the nicest, most decent guys in Hollywood.
Right.
So I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I didn't know that. That's actually pretty interesting. But it does not surprise me that Kurt Russell was like, I don't like you. You're a dirtbag. Get away from me.
So when Steven Seagal is giving him the evil eye as they're walking into like the Situation Room, like that's for real.
Wow. It's awkward, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I just thought it was good acting on their parts, but yeah, that's you know, good on Kurt, because like I said, Steven Seagal, awful human being.
Yeah. So even though that Kurt Russell and all the production in the U.S., he's on the posters, he's on the DVDs, on the Laserdisc. But Steven Seagal was added to German and Dutch cinema posters and VHS covers to attract more viewers because he was more popular over there. They must have felt really jilted when he got blown out of the thing. Okay, so and then according to John Leguizamo in his autobiography, Steven Seagal physically attacked him during filming in an effort to scare the cast and crew. Leguizamo claimed that he had laughed. It's something that Steven Seagal said, thinking it was a joke, but Steven Seagal proved him wrong by elbowing him against a wall.
Yikes.
Yeah, so apparently he laughed at something. Yeah. He laughed at Steven about something, and Steven was serious, and he was just like, you don't laugh.
It goes back to Steven Seagal is a terrible person. He's a bully and a horrible human being. And, I mean, I'm glad as a film fan that his star fell. And he's basically nobody now because he was a scumbag. He was a scummy human being.
According to John Leguizamo in his autobiography, John Leguizamo liked to improv a little bit, right? Like, I don't know if he went to improv school. Like, that's part of his acting.
He's comedians. That's part of it.
But, apparently it did not sit well with Kurt Russell. And basically, they got into a shoving match at one time. And
that had to be surreal to see.
So it was all started by the hope the smell doesn't give us away line.
That does seem really mean spirited. Like, there's a scene where Kurt Russell takes off his shoes.
Yeah, and he's like on the line, like,
and John Leguizamo goes, "I hope the smell doesn't give us away." It seems really mean spirited in the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these guys are already like, don't like this guy because he's an analyst. Yeah. He's a guy who sits behind a desk all day. They're the one doing the dark, you know, the gritty work. And, you know, I guess John Leguizamo thought that, like, oh, I'm going to play with that a little bit, you know, whatever. And kind of pick on him a little bit, you know, because that's what they, you know. So, yeah. So, but Kurt is, he's like, no, man, don't improv, man. Like,
He's following lines,
man. Yeah. So, and yeah, but I think once again, it shows Kurt Russell's like professionalism that he doesn't like play around.
Well, and
like,
there are stories of Leguizamo being difficult on sets too. So,
well, I mean, Steven Seagal elbowed him, Kurt Russell got into a shoving match. So it might be a little bit of John Leguizamo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. So in real life, Kurt Russell, we said, is an FAA licensed pilot. The airline that featured in the film Oceanic was also the name of the airliner that crashed in the TV series Lost.
Is it really?
Yeah. If you want to know the movie that's on the film and the plane seen in the background, it's Born to Be Wild. The 1995 Born to Be Wild.
I was wondering about that, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one with... why can't I think of people's names?
It's late. We're actually way past when we normally stop these things, so we're getting a little, you know, punchy.
Look it up. Born to Be Wild, 1995. The plane used by the Special Forces is a modified F-117 type with a mating tube to a 747.
Yeah.
So that thing is real. It's like they had that planned in case something like that ever happened.
Wow. That's kind of mind-blowing.
One of the four movies featuring Kurt Russell and J.T. Walsh, we mentioned they're kind of like friends. They also appeared in Tequila Sunrise, which was 1988, Backdraft in 1991.
An excellent film.
Breakdown in 1997.
Which we talked about earlier.
Yeah, which we talked about. Yeah, so it's like, you know, two movies with these two guys.
Yeah, that's four movies together. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but this is the only movie that they did not share any scenes together.
That's true.
Okay. Steven Seagal... We mentioned how horrible he is. He earned a Razzie nomination for the worst supporting actor.
He's not bad in it.
Yeah, it was a nomination, but lost to Marlon Brando in The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Which, that's a terrible performance. That's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, that was near Marlon's end of his career, sort of.
Yeah, it's.
That's
a different podcast for a different day.
He definitely phoned that one in. But, but no, if you just to reiterate to our audience what the Razzies are short for a Golden Raspberry Awards for the worst in film that was started by UCLA film graduates.
Basically the Bizarro Oscars.
Yeah. The budget for Executive Decision was $55 million, and the box office, it grossed $122 million.
It was a hit.
So, yeah, I mean, that's like more than double.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Kurt Russell at this time period was a bona fide movie star.
Yeah. Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars. Not 4, 3.
Yeah. I'd agree with both his assumptions of these two movies.
All right. He says it's the kind of thriller where it's fun to chortle over the plot of a movie for people who are sophisticated enough to know how shameless the film is, but fun-loving enough to enjoy its excesses and maniac zeal.
That sums it up very well.
So, I mean, I grabbed that like straight from the intro. That's like his third or fourth sentence.
Yeah, he nails it pretty well. Yeah.
I mean, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, again, every time I read like a blurb from Ebert, it makes me realize what a bad writer I actually am.
I mean, just to put it together like that in like one whole sentence.
Yeah.
It has a 64% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and a 53% audience score.
The audience score surprises me.
I know.
I don't know if it's because it had some of the stuff in it hasn't aged well with the political stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a fun movie. Again, when you watch older films, you have to think about the time in which they were made. You know,
I think the pacing is also a little bit slow for a modern time period.
Yeah. Well, again, it's got about 30 minutes of really unneeded footage in it.
Yeah. But still, there's scenes in the middle where they're trying to locate the guy.
Yeah, no, there's like, yeah, you could definitely trim it up. It's still good. Yeah. It's still a worthwhile movie. It's still fun to watch. It's not perfect by any means.
Yeah, like watch. I don't need to watch how clumsy, you know, that Kurt Russell is trying to get up on the, you know, thing. We know he's not a commando and can get up on the zip line and pull himself upside down. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
It's a bit indulgent. Yeah,
yeah.
So let's move on to recommendations, man.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations this week?
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about those.
Okay, well, I've got two.
Okay.
So I'll make up for it this time, but only this time.
All right. No, okay. Well, I mean, I've already mentioned, I mean, I think, you know, I think Patriot, I think.
You're at Patriot Games for sure. Yeah.
The Fugitive and Patriot Games. I mean.
Yeah. Again, you know, I'm just teasing your brother. I don't know. As far as other Kurt Russell movies that are worth watching, I'm going to recommend a more recent one that has kind of fallen through the cracks. As he's gotten older, he doesn't act that much anymore. Mm-hmm. So when he does, especially when he's the focus of a film, it's pretty special. He made a film, about, I think in 2015, called The Art of the Steal. S-T-E-A-L.
Right.
And it's basically a heist movie.
Right.
With Kurt Russell as an aging,
right,
Evel Knievel stuntman. And it is very fun. It's got a lot of laughs in it. It's got Matt Dillon,
right,
and Jay Baruchel. Mm-hmm. I think it's a Canadian production.
Okay,
but it's a very light, fun movie.
Okay,
and it's Kurt a little older, a little slower, but at the height of like his charismatic, likable self.
Right,
it's really fun and really worth watching. I believe it's on Netflix. If you want to see it for free, guys, it should still be on there by the time this comes out.
Right,
The Art of the Steal.
Right.
Now, my second movie is not a Kurt Russell movie, but it would play really well with Breakdown.
Right.
Steven Spielberg, his first film, was a made-for-TV movie.
Right.
That got released theatrically when he hit it big with Jaws.
Uh-huh.
It's called Duel.
Okay.
D-U-E-L.
Okay.
And it's about a man traveling through the desert who runs afoul of a pickup truck, of a semi-truck driver. And the semi-truck driver, you never see him. But he starts chasing this poor guy in his car across the desert.
Mm.
And it feels so much like Breakdown in like tone and style. It's got the same bit of tension and the same bit of mystery of like, why is this happening? Why is this semi-truck driver harassing this poor guy in this car?
Yeah.
It is super like, it's like 70 minutes. Mm. It's very tense. It's very taut.
Right.
It's Spielberg's first big production, even though it was made for TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good, and a lot of people have not seen it.
Right. I'm still surprised. I know a lot of film buffs have seen it, and it's a cult classic. But if you have not seen, I mean, I mentioned The Fugitive. I mentioned like Patriot Games. But if you have not seen Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, you don't stop listening to our podcast.
Stop what you're doing. Turn off this podcast right now. And go find it.
Yeah. It is one of my all-time favorite films.
Yes.
It is such a gleeful, fun movie. It's Kurt Russell doing a John Wayne impression. But it's like if John Wayne got lost in a Shaw Brothers Kung Fu movie. And it is so fun and so subversive.
Yeah.
It came out in like, I think it came out in 86 or 87. It is so far ahead of its time. Yeah. It bombed at the time. But if that movie came out today, it would be the biggest hit.
But I think that's why, I mean, part of it is like a big cult classic. I mean, it's just like, you know, when I remember watching it on HBO. It's a fantastic movie. That's when I first, you know, saw, fell in love with Kurt Russell, you know, and like, you know, what he could do, what he's capable of. So, yeah, I mean, it multiple fantastic movie. I don't think you can go wrong.
Yeah, we don't say this a lot, but that is a video culture essential movie.
Yeah, we're going to
insist that you watch it.
We still need to make this list of essential movies at some point.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that one's probably up on the list.
For like sure,
one of the top
man, for
five,
sure.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that is the essence of what this show is in a lot of ways.
Right.
I mean, if it was put into film form, that's it. So good call on that one, my friend.
And yes, I do own it on Laserdisc.
Yeah, as you should. I think we showed pictures of it on the Twitter feed back a few months ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I picked it up, man, I had to have it. I got laser. I was like thinking of the movies I got to have. I mean, I've got War Games on DVD. But maybe we should talk about formats on our next episode.
That's not a bad idea. So we'd be kind of teasing it a little bit. I mean, maybe bring up your Laserdisc collection and you talk about your setup. So maybe a whole episode dedicated to formats is not a bad idea.
Maybe.
But until then, to use a line from Big Trouble in Little China, I think we shook the pillars of heaven this time, my friend.
That's right.
Yeah. Man, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a great movie. Enjoyed it. You guys have a great time. We'll see you next time.
I'm Matthew Estrie.
And I'm Ryan Acree.
Go watch some movies, guys.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
Excuse me, sir. May I help you? Sir?
In an age...
Excuse me, sir. May I help you?
When terrorism knows no boundaries... And the level of threat...
I have a message for the American president.
...knows no limits.
I am in control of Flight 343.
Well, sir, I don't think this is about hostages.
What are you talking about?
A shipment of the nerve toxin DZ-5 was hijacked.
Are you saying nerve gas is on board?
Yes, sir, I am. They plan to use the DZ-5 and the airplane together to detonate here, over Washington.
When global response is routine...
London is demanding immediate action.
There's a hatch on the belly of the 747 near the nose.
We could dock there.
I know you wrote the book on assaulting hijacked aircraft, but this is 5 miles above the Earth.
I don't think we have any other options.
And advanced technology...
Who's this? 007?
...can accomplish miracles.
What are you doing up here?
Who the hell else is gonna do it? You?
I'm opening the outer hatch.
A life or death decision.
I hope there's a good movie on this flight.
For 400 hostages in a plane.
Keep it going.
Or 40 million civilians on the ground.
You can forget Washington. There's enough nerve agent here to wipe out half the eastern seaboard.
Will come down to a choice between the unthinkable.
The Pentagon is gonna shoot us down.
And the impossible.
I'll reach our airspace in 85 minutes.
The hatch has got to be closed now or we'll lose both planes.
Order the F-14s to intercept the 747.
Kurt Russell.
I'm losing control of the airplane.
Halle Berry, John Leguizamo, and Steven Seagal.
We're not going to make it!
You are!
Warner Brothers invites you.
We're not really going to shoot this plane down, are we?
It's too late. They've already crossed the line.
To fasten your seatbelts.
This is directly from the president himself.
Everybody down!
Now you have your orders. Execute them.